This podcast is brought to you by the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, ACAM for short. You can find more podcasts and other resources on our website, www.acamh.org, and follow us on social media by searching ACAMH.
Hello and welcome to ADHD, A Young Person's Guide. This podcast series focuses on attention deficit hyperactivity disorders, referred to as ADHD, and is designed to help young people and their families. It is produced by the mental health charity, the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, ACAM for short, in partnership with Clinical Partners, the UK's largest private mental health partnership. Search for Clinical Partners ADHD or visit www.clinicalpartners.co.uk for more information. I'm Dr. Blondin French. I am a researcher at MindTech at the University of Nottingham. My main research interests are on neurodevelopmental disorders, but more specifically ADHD and dyspraxia. I work with young people and parents of children with ADHD, and I myself received a diagnosis of ADHD as an adult, which helped me make sense of my life as a child and adolescent and helped me go to university and put the right support in place. The focus of today's discussion is
about giving yourself the right support. So you've got a diagnosis, now what? Where do you go from there? How can you identify the many issues you are struggling with? And how can you take a strength-based approach to managing your ADHD? We'll be looking at what support is out there for you, what the key evidence-based apps, books, and planners are to help make sense of things, and why changing it up regularly makes a difference.
Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Ruth Pearce, who is the founder and CEO of Parenting Special Children, a charity based in Berkshire. Parenting Special Children's mission is to provide specialist parenting support to parents and carers of children and young people with special needs so they can create positive change in their lives. You can find out more at www.parentingspecialchildren.co.uk. Ruth, welcome. Can you please start with a brief introduction about who you are, please?
Hi, my name is Ruth Pearce. I'm from Parenting Special Children, a Berkshire-based charity supporting families with neurodiverse children and young people. And also, I'm a parent of three young adults who are neurodiverse, two of whom have got ADHD and one who's got a learning disability. So I bring that lived experience as well as experience of working with many families.
And Chris, would you like to introduce yourself?
So hi, I'm Chris. I'm 26. I got diagnosed about 4 years ago now, and I am currently at university. I'm studying to be a mental health nurse myself, I guess from my own personal experience of mental health. I've always, you know, had a passion for that, and that's sort of more like psychological subjects.
Chris, how did you feel when you got your diagnosis, and what were the first big issues that you faced?
I guess for me, when I got diagnosed with ADHD, I didn't really know that much about it myself. I knew the sort of basics of it. And my family suspected something was different about me, I guess, in terms of my personality. But they didn't, again, understand what was sort of truly going on. And it sort of took a while in the initial phases of being diagnosed with ADHD that they had to get their head around that and figure out, you know, what was helpful, what was not so helpful to say. So I guess it was a whole spectrum of different feelings, really, when I got diagnosed. A lot of issues around just how best to approach it, but then also how it sort of defines me, I suppose. And yeah, it was really challenging in just the sense that I didn't really know that much about it myself. And I obviously knew that I had a, you know, some sort of problem that I did want to face. But yeah, I said that the issues were mainly around sort of family dynamics and being diagnosed with any illness, I think.
So Ruth, what is a strength-based approach to managing ADHD, and how can our strength help the area we find more challenging?
So a strength-based approach is looking at the strengths rather than the deficits or the challenges. the name ADHD already has two sort of negative words in there. So deficit disorder. So we're wanting to reframe that really and see it as a much more a difference approach rather than the disorder and the deficit. So taking a strength-based approach means that we focus on our strengths, our abilities. So that could be the energy that you have or the hyperfocus, the determination, that creative thinking, problem solving, rather than the challenges that means that we feel very negative about ADHD. Second question, how can our strengths help the areas we find more challenging, are again focusing on those strengths that I just mentioned. So we see it as more positive, and that actually, say, having hyperfocus can help us really develop our skills in a particular area, which is something that's much needed. So somebody doing a PhD in a particular area may be something that they can then focus on. So that can be a strength rather than a challenge. And it's easy to feel a failure when we look at a deficit model rather than a positive model, a strength-based approach. So finding those people who are your supporters who can celebrate your strengths and encourage you in those and guide you can help overcome the challenges that might come with ADHD.
How do you identify the key issues that you're struggling with? Do you choose like a small step to make a change or like kind of bonding?
I mean, I guess for me, I've always found that doing it step by step is a lot more sort of beneficial, but also more achievable really when it comes to any sort of goal setting. If I try and do everything all at once, then it's just going to overwhelm me even more, and it's mentally just going to be a lot more challenging for me. I am still someone who does have the tendency to want to do everything all in one go and want everything all like instantly and straight away, and you know, not wanting to have to wait. I'm quite an impatient person. But no, I do think that obviously I have to be realistic, and yeah, step-by-step approach, more sort of gradual, is as much as difficult as it is to tolerate. I think, you know, making those smaller changes can sort of add up to a more sort of long-term benefit.
Thank you, Chris. So for you, what type of support is there for young people? Can you give an example of your experience?
With my ADHD, I've got different support over the years from family and friends, from other academic sort of study staff. It's been difficult to get support sometimes. I've not really known where to go. My university have been really helpful. They've given me a lot more adjustments when it comes to assignments. And I've been able to speak to university staff as well about, you know, my condition and there is support out there, but I would say that there could be more support available, especially when it comes to the sort of the peer support aspect of it and sort of relating to people who are going through similar experiences. When I did start university, I applied for disability support allowance. They basically linked me with a individual who worked for the disability support team at my university, and they were able to offer me assistive software, a laptop which they kind of could partially fund for, which sort of aided and helped with my studies. It's like a laptop which is a bit more specialized for people who do have any sort of condition that might affect their concentration or their ability to focus on things. So yeah, if anyone's applying for university, I think prior to actually starting, I would encourage them to get disability support allowance first. Go to like a DSA, apply for that first, and then you can like get software from that. And then also just looking at your university website or speaking to your personal tutor at university or college, they can guidepost you to like a support team who, you know, have the ability to give you that assistance as well. There's always a support team at university, or at least it should be.
we talking about ADHD really make a difference?
Absolutely, because I think you, from talking to many families, you can find your tribe so that you know you're not on your own. So there might be local support groups, local organisations that you can join that will give you information and you can learn more about ADHD, which is really important. There are such a lot of different websites, but websites that I have found particularly helpful and would recommend are, in the UK, there's the ADHD Foundation, and there's a lot of information there for young adults and young people and parents and professionals who can support you. Attitude is an American website, and they are excellent. They have really short articles that are quick to read, which is always great. Videos that you can watch, and really lots of strategies. And so I think, you know, hearing what other people find difficult and strategies to help is invaluable.
Thank you, Ruth. I think you're completely right. Talking about it makes you understand what actually is ADHD and what isn't. So I find that there are a lot of people on TikTok or Instagram that talk about the little quirks that comes with having ADHD that I personally never have thought were part of the official diagnosis. So for example, people with ADHD have got high sensory functioning issues. So things like sound and touch and taste and smell can really affect how we concentrate, or we don't like wearing certain fabrics, or we don't like the textures of certain things. Well, this was never explained to me in my diagnosis. Looking at people, listening to podcasts, hearing other people's experience of having ADHD really helped me understand all the little nuances that having ADHD have. So I think it's really good advice to look out there and listen to the people's experience, because then it will make you understand better how it affects you. Chris, anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, so I do listen to podcasts quite a lot on BBC Sounds or Spotify. I've read quite a few books on, not just on ADHD, not really ADHD specific, but I guess, you know, they can be used in that. For that reason, and there's a book that I would personally recommend, but it's more to do with, I guess, anxiety rather than ADHD specifically. Well, it's called Get Out of Your Mind and Into Your Life by Stephen Hayes, and I find that's been a really good book to read. It's kind of allowing you to anchor yourself back when you are overthinking things and when you are sort of having difficulty when it comes to concentration, just give you some tools. And I've also set up podcasts at various times. There's been a podcast before called Balance, which is about sort of more like mindfulness techniques, relaxation techniques, and then podcasts which are more sort of like just chat shows. I guess they're not really like strategies as such, but they're just podcasts that just talk about mental health in general, which I find helpful just because I feel like then I'm not alone with it and I can relate to someone who's going through a similar thing. So sometimes it's not just about like finding out advice, it's more just actually listening to a podcast which makes me feel like less alone with the struggle with ADHD.
Yeah, I particularly like the Neurodivers. They use comic illustrations a lot, which again, you don't need lots of words. You just need the right words. And so I love what they do, and they tackle every subject. And I think as Blondine was saying around, you know, those sensory issues or, you know, that the heightened emotions that people feel that may not be explained at diagnosis, but learning more about them and then seeing how other people manage and knowing that you're not alone is really valuable.
Attitude is also very good because it has really specific articles. So you're right, this is a really good resource for young people and adults, because if you put ADHD and friendship or ADHD and hormones or ADHD and having children or anything into the search criteria of attitude, it comes up with loads of articles about how to deal with things like that, how to talk to your boss, how to talk to your peers. Very short, bite-sized articles, but really informative. And it's really supportive for young people. Chris, tell us how you stay organized.
when it comes to tools and like approaches that I find personally quite helpful is, obviously in today's world, you get, you know, you got, everyone's got a smartphone. I use my calendar a lot of the time to stay organized on that and, yeah, keep my life in check with like events. And I do forget things quite a lot of the time because my brain just goes on overdrive at times. But yeah, I find that kind of views and things like to-do lists really helpful. So, you know, whenever I am sort of feeling a little bit like overwhelmed with things and a bit overridden with things, I tend to do like a to-do list just so that I don't forget things, and also just to make sure that I'm in control of doing the things that are more of like a top priority versus a task that might just be needed to do later on in the day or in the week. So I find those sorts of things really helpful in just ticking them off as I go along. Otherwise I sort of jump from one thing to the next without really thinking about it. And then also with university work or any college work that I've had in the past, I've also had like assistive software given to me on my laptop. So if there's obviously anyone out there that, you know, wanted to look into any software that might be helpful, there's a software called MindView, which I use for my work, but also for keeping organized. And it's basically a software where you can kind of organize and create templates for your assignments, essays, exams, revision in a more constructed way, in a way which is it allows you to kind of do like different views. So like maybe like a spider diagram or a bar chart or whatever really works for you. It just gives you that more, a different sort of like visual aspect. Instead of like reading loads of different paragraphs, loads of different sentences, you can see it in more of a diagram form. So yeah, those sorts of things. And also I use like things like text-to-speech translation apps, and I find them quite helpful because sometimes I find that reading pages and pages of text really difficult. So I can like highlight different text and then it just reads out for me like in a sort of podcast form, I suppose. And that's always quite helpful to use as well.
Ruth, anything to add?
Again, it's sort of understanding ADHD, coming back to the first questions, that the more you understand, the less that you might feel guilty and feel overwhelmed. So if we know that with ADHD, executive function, the way that, you know, our brain response to organization can be challenged. So if we know that, we can put things into place. And I think the earlier that we learn that and we gain strategies to help us, the better, because that will carry us through. Like Blondine said, you have to bring in the changes because our brain wants lots of, you know, can only manage for so long and then it needs change. And so that is a challenge in itself. So there will be plenty of apps and I can give you examples, but they also will be subjective. They'll be what's right for you. So looking at ones that have been suggested, and I want to give a shout out to NeuroDivers as well, because I got some of this information from them because I know that they will be using them. So Forest is one of the apps that was suggested, and a planner app, but there are a lot of apps. And so it's got to be right for you, because you can start using it and then just think, no, this isn't for me at all. So it's about exploring what's right for you.
Thank you, Ruth. I think that's a really important point with any ADHD tips. We can give a lot of tips on getting organized and remembering things and focusing, etc. But A, it really depends on the ADHD person. And B, what works sometimes might not work at other times. And C, just because one app doesn't work doesn't mean another app won't work. I think it's quite easy to get down. You're trying an app and it just doesn't work for you. And you think, oh gosh, I just can't remember things. But actually, it's just because this one app is not right, it's not the right nose, it doesn't come through in the right format, or it doesn't do the things that you want to do, but other organizing app might be exactly what you need. So it's just a matter of trial and error.
Yeah, I think that what you said as well, Blondine, is that it's important, as you said, that different things work for different people and they work for a certain amount of time. Otherwise, I think we go into that guilt feeling, oh, I'm just rubbish at organization, and that doesn't help. So knowing that you're going to have to ring the changes is quite helpful. When I was thinking through this, I was thinking about the fact that we have our phones on us probably 99% of the time. And, you know, that could be a challenge if you've got ADHD, because actually you might find it hard to switch off from your phone. However, it's a really good tool to have, plus to use alerts. So having a calendar on there and putting reminders so that it comes up on your phone when you need to do something can be really helpful, because you've got prompts that everything can go on your phone, and like your notes on your phone. So to-do lists are really helpful to keep on doing. So that gives you prompts, and you can have different sections, homes, work, school, and it's easy. You've got your phone. I know it's not that easy, because otherwise we would all be doing it, but I think it's finding what's right for you. I just also wanted to add that have people around you that can support you. So somebody who's more organized than you, you'll have strengths and they'll have other strengths and challenges. So, you know, having somebody who can help you is really key.
And maybe help with some things, like, for example, my manager puts meeting in my diary and invites me to meeting, which means they come up on my online diary, so I don't have to remember that every Wednesday I've got a meeting. And it would be the same if you're at university, maybe asking one of your peers to input the lectures on your diary, invite you to lectures on your Google Calendar or any other online diary. So asking the support from your parents or from your partner or someone to just set it up for you. Then you don't have to worry about it if you have put it in your calendar or not. And that's the kind of support that you can get from friends and family. Chris, are you able to kind of recognize a time during the day like, wow, I need to kind of have a time out? How do you kind of recognize those signs, those signals, and what do you do? What's your coping mechanism?
Yeah, I guess, I suppose for myself, the warning signs are more when I'm actually like ruminating by myself than if I'm not isolating myself. And if that's the case, I tend to depending on where I am or who's available, I tend to either just share my thoughts with parents, with family, someone that I trust. I think that's the best way that I tend to get support. If I can't do that, then I always find that either writing out how I feel, I've got a daily journal that I have, doing some sort of drawing or painting where I can draw or sketch something out, it resembles like how I'm feeling at the moment. I've done a lot of art therapy in the past, done like a lot of group therapy where you do sort of journaling as well. So I find those sorts of like creative spaces really, really helpful. I just think it gives you that sort of external outlet. You know, obviously everyone's different, but when it does come to ADHD, I do find that creative spaces are really, really helpful in supporting me, you know, get out of that rumination phase. You know, if that doesn't work, then I do talk to people, and I find that just communicating how I feel, it gets out of my system. And then obviously when I first got diagnosed, I think there was a lot of like online research I did in terms of trying to find new sort of coping strategies that I could use in my personal life, but also in my academic studies as well. So I would just encourage anyone to really, you know, research online. There's a lot of information online, whether that be via YouTube video or whether that be some other sort of online support website.
Ruth, how regularly do you have to change what you're using to support you?
I think it's getting the balance, because you need to give enough time for something to work. So they say it takes 6 weeks to change a habit, maybe not somebody with ADHD, but it does take time to embed change. However, the ADHD brain likes lots of change. And so I think if you're getting warning signs that your brain is just not engaging with that method anymore, then it's time to look at something that might work. The system that you're using might have got too complicated, or you might feel a bit overwhelmed by it. So it's finding another system that will work. Keeping it simple is really important and might mean you don't need to change it so often. Finding again somebody to help you. So if you're thinking, yeah, this just isn't working and you're dropping the ball, ask someone else to help you. And also look at some of the people that Blondine has mentioned on social media, or they might be using new systems that will help you.
And is there an element as well of, again, understanding subtle changes? So, for example, color coding might change how your planner, for example, and is just integrating those small changes can actually work very well as well if changing the whole system seems overwhelming.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Small changes can make a big difference.
So what are the top three tips for giving yourself the right support? What are the key messages that you would like people to take from this podcast?
Find someone who can celebrate your strengths and support you with the challenges all around organization and any other way that ADHD impacts you. So having that strength-based approach, find systems to support you. There are more systems than ever. And as Blondine said, those little changes can make a big difference. So not to feel overwhelmed. Finally, really celebrate your strengths, so that you have got that really positive attitude that can carry you through the challenges when they come.
What are your top three tips for giving yourself the right support?
Top three tips, I would say, number one would be everyone's individual. So make sure that you have a few different coping strategies which you find helpful. And it's not just about what one person finds helpful is definitely the right one for you. So for me, it might be art and writing, but that might not work for someone else. Second, I would say speak out. So family, friends, that external support. Just find one or two people you can trust. Doesn't have to be like a whole range of people, just one or two people. And then three, I would say if you need that professional support or any sort of that therapeutic support, then obviously your GP might be able to signpost you to like therapy services. That's how I sort of got diagnosed in the first place. So the earlier you get diagnosed and the earlier you sort of get that reassurance, then the better, I think.
Chris and Ruth, thank you very much for this really useful podcast. Do please subscribe to this series of podcasts titled ADHD, A Young Person's Guide. Other episodes include Sleep, Adjusting to Change, Risky Behaviour, and a two-part special on women and girls.
For more details, please visit the ACAM website, www.acamh.org, and Twitter at ACAMH. And don't forget to follow us on your preferred streaming platform. Let us know if you enjoyed the podcast with a rating or review, and do share with friends and colleagues.
This podcast was brought to you by the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, ACAM for short.